Welcome friends, welcome to another edition of Grammar Talks. Now, today is Sunday and I'm recording this on Sunday morning just to while away some time before I go out and do some household chores. But I thought that this would be a very interesting time to talk to you about some things that came to my mind. Now, this is a very informal discussion on what is grammar. Some people often think of grammar as a matter of pronouncements being something good and something bad, and some rules about how to write sentences and etc. And there are certain negative tones that we are never supposed to use. But linguists are not very interested in this sort of bossy definitions or what is called prescriptive ideas. For linguists, grammar is a very serious business. It's the collection of the principles of defining how to put together a sentence, right from the very basic sounds up to the meaning stage. Now, one often hears people say that such and such language has no grammar, but that is not correct. That is not true of any language whatsoever on this planet. Now, every language has restrictions on how words must be arranged. There are some rules that are there. These restrictions are the principles of syntax and morphology, and sometimes even pronunciation rules and sandhi rules. Now, every language has about as much syntax as any other language. For example, all languages have principles for constructing sentences that ask questions with a yes or no answer. For example, in English, can you hear me? Or questions like, what did you see over there? Sentences that express commands like, close the door, or eat your vegetables. And sentences that make assertive propositions like, whales eat plankton, and tigers eat deer. Well, this is just to give you an idea about how we go about looking at grammar. So here we see that the word order is a very, very important component of many languages, including English. Well, there are some languages where there is no fixed word order. You can write the sentence using any order that you choose. So these are more free word order languages, like say for example Sanskrit. But here again there would be some rules that would attach to the morphological properties of these words that are there, which would define the meanings of a particular context. So English is not word order free. So there is a particular order in which the syntactic principles of English language must hold. So what are they? So these are syntactic principles of the language must insist on some word order. So in English, it is usually, it is something like subject, verb, and object. So in the sentence, whales eat plankton, which I talked about just a bit ago, whales is the subject, eat is the verb, and plankton is the object. On the other hand, sentences in Japanese or Hindi, they allow the construction of sentences in a different sort of a way. So rather than having subject, verb, object as in English, we usually have subject, object, verb. Languages such as Irish or Arabic would have verb, subject, object. And even when a language allows several orders of phrases in a language, the choice among them is systematically regulated. So there are certain rules that there may be a higher requirement of something, or maybe a requirement as a first priority over something, or the requirement that the first phrase refer to a particular thing that you're talking about, or that whatever the first phrase is, the second must be the main clause of the verb. Now, not only these languages, all languages have syntax, but similar syntax is found over and over again in all languages. So therefore, we need to look at another aspect of grammar that is an important part, and that is word structure. This important aspect of grammar, in which languages differ more drastically, namely in the morphological status, the principles of governing the structure of words, language do not employ the morphology to similar extents. So every language has a different way of doing morphology, but there are some regularities of pattern. In fact, they differ to a substantial extent in the extent to which they allow words to be built out of words from other similar elements. Languages also permit some differences between the extent to which these words may vary according to their functions of the sentence. Now, in English, you have to choose different pronouns, for example, him versus he or himself, they versus them, or the subject and object through which there is no choice to be made with the nouns, as in whales eat plankton or tigers eat deer. So you have no choice in terms of how these words need to be written, in the order in which they need to be written. But the word structure can determine some very interesting ideas and shapes and the output sentences. Now, although we have identified some differences between the syntactic properties and the morphological status, to a large extent, it is a matter of research that is ongoing to decide what counts as morphology and what counts as syntax. So sometimes the difference is not as contrastive. Sometimes you have this difference is blurred, and therefore some morphosyntactic roles also come into play. Sometimes an answer to a question can change with respect to how and where the meaning of the sentence needs to come out. And in some and sometimes even when we improve the theoretical status, we know a better theory, we formulate a better theory, so status may change from what is being regarded as syntax to what is regarded as morphology. Obviously, these things are ongoing, but the basic syntactic principles and basic morphological principles hold true even there. Now, linguists cannot present every full statement, all the principles of grammar for all the languages available of the world, but at the same time, the statement of all the principles of grammar must be followed. The central aim, therefore, of modern linguistic structure or modern linguistic analysis is to understand these relationships. What is also important is that there is no criteria for what is called a perfect grammar, or there is no perfect grammar that exists except as an idealistic construction that is more or less unachievable from the point of view of a linguist. There will probably always be someone who finds fault in something you say or write. On the other hand, one could argue that the native speakers always use a perfect grammar because they are the ones who are the native speakers and they make the rules. But what are these rules? But before knowing that these rule structure, we also need to know what is the view of grammar. Now, there are two ways of looking at grammar. One is a prescriptive view of grammar, the other is a descriptive view of grammar. And on the other hand, we have three questions from which these prescriptive and descriptive definitions emerge. So the three questions are, what is grammar? Where does the grammar come from? And grammar is blah, blah, blah. So you define something of a grammar by looking at these three questions. So if you look at the first one, what is grammar? A prescriptive view would say that it is a collection of rules that govern how people use a particular language. Whereas the descriptive view would say the ones that are observable patterns in the way in which people use a language. Coming to the second question, where does grammar come from? The prescriptive view says that there are rule makers, the grammarians who make the rules, and that is where the grammar rules come from, or the grammar comes from. Whereas the descriptive ones, the descriptive view would say that it is the community use that would define where the grammar comes from, the users of the community, users of the language. And the third one is a kind of a definitional statement, where prescriptive view says that grammar is what the grammarian says it is, whereas the descriptive view would recognize that grammar is what we as users make use and make it. So let us look at the famous example provided by Noam Chomsky that illustrates this point. The sentence is, colorless green ideas sleep furiously. What does that mean? This is a perfectly normal sentence, but without any meaning. Well, it does have some meaning, but it is pragmatically impossible to see how a green idea can exist, unless, of course, you use green as an epithet for jealousy. So you see that syntax and morphology also, to a large extent, is responsible for giving you the understanding of a sentence at the pragmatic level. Or say, for example, you say colorless green ideas. So you see, if it is a green, then it cannot be colorless. So they are contradictory to each other, but colorless is used in a certain context, and you can understand the meaning of this word in the sentence itself. The point here is that people make meaning together with the context, and that the mutual understanding is not dependent on what a person outside the context can deem to be correct. So what are its implications for you? So when you are using a sentence, you need to do some things. These are that you should avoid what is an incorrect perceived grammar. You should know who you are speaking to and in what context. And you should always remember that the correctness is a negotiated strategy. You don't simply assume that the person who asks for the perfect grammar or prescribes how to write would accept your version of the correct version or acceptable use, or that, for that matter, that person himself or herself may not be able to make such judgments. Such people are only representing their preferences, which may or may not align very closely to the conventions of the discourse in which you are writing. But then, when you talk about a very formal context of academic language, listen to your professors, they write, they do follow a certain conservative ideas about how to write a sentence. They tend to take a prescriptive stance because that is the more quote-unquote standard variety. But they are nonetheless important to them, and therefore your grade may depend upon it. So be astute and be firm in trying to deal with certain situations, and of course, do learn your grammar correctly. Thank you.